Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chapter 34. Then comments at the end. Overview of Rasa Tattva from Jiva Dharma, Chapters 26 to 28. So now they're discussing Gaunarati. Rajana, Gurudev, please now describe Gaunarati that gives rise to the secondary spiritual process. Goswami, the super excellent secondary bhavas that belong to the Alamba, the transcendental lover and beloved, are known as Gaunarati. There are seven Gaunaratis: Hasya, laughter; Vishmaya, astonishment; Utsaha, eagerness; Shoka or Karuna, lamentation or compassion; Krodha, anger, because you have Shoka, you know, or lamentation or compassion, because one is lamenting, the other is compassionate. So they're both part of the same flavor. Krodha, anger; Bhaya, fear; Jugupsa or Ninda, scorn, ghastliness, and disgust. Oh, okay. Can be all that. Scorn, ghastliness, and disgust. Only the first six bhavas can be directed towards Krishna. So in other words, the ghastliness and the fear is not directed towards Krishna. When Shuddha Rati appears within the heart of a devotee and he feels his bodily activities to be an object of disgust, we speak of Jagupsa Bhava, scorn, which is considered the seventh Gauna Bhava. Oh no, excuse me, the fear can also be directed towards Krishna. It's just the ghastliness or the scorn that disgust, those aren't. So a devotee may be upset with how he's behaving, or you like to see the acharyas, I'm so fallen, I'm this and that. So that's not directed at Krishna, that's directed at yourself. At Krishna, that's not directed. But the other six can be directed. Like you see fear, the Kamsa has that fear and things like that. Between the secondary Gona Bhava symptoms and the primary Mukya Shuddha Sattva Bhava, there are inherent differences. Yet, because Gona Bhava is linked with the contracting Parakta Mukya Rati, the seven emotions beginning with hasa are categorized as rati. In certain devotees, one or more of the Gona Bhavas reach a constant state in their relationship with Krishna, but this is generally not the case. Thus, Gona Bhavas are referred to as irregular, unsteady, and temporary, and only under specific conditions do they attain sufficient force to dislodge the primary rati and establish themselves as the preponderant bhava. Right, so if the other is there, it may be in the background. So it's only on certain situations it may become so strong it becomes the prominent aspect. But the other, the Staibhava, is still there as the support for it. It's still the one that's it's being arranged through. And it's you know, and just certain devotees, maybe that becomes a prominent thing. You know, like let's say Madhu Mangal, the Hasya is like constant. It's always there. But it's still friendship, but it has that as a very constant element. But most everybody else, it will come and go. Hasya Rati appears when funny words are spoken, when the dress looks odd, and when actions are caricatured, and so on. Opening of the heart, widening of the eyes, flaring of the nostrils, trembling of the lips and cheeks characterize this mellow. This smell is also generated by love of Krishna, combined with sankocha bhava, the emotion of hesitation. So if there's some hesitation, there also sometimes there's laughter. You see, it comes up. You know, someone's going to do something and then they can't, and then there'll be a moment like that, and then either you start laughing or others will start laughing, or you know, you were going to do something and then, you know, how you say that, you know, something just goes completely wrong, so you just stop and then you start laughing like that. By seeing something wonderful or extraordinary, the heart expands in vishmaya, astonishment and wonder. The external symptoms are such as widening of the eyes and exclamations of appreciation. Utsaha is the resolute enthusiasm of the mind to engage in grand projects, which are eulogized by stalwart saints. This mellow displays symptoms such as urgency and activity, impatience, great exertion, and fervor. In Krodharati, the heart burns in rage on account of pratikula bhava, displeasing and unfavorable feelings. This mellow displays symptoms such as katma, callous intemperance, frowning, and livid eye expressions. Bhayarati is caused by seeing a terrifying scene, where the heart palpitates with restless apprehension. This mellow displays symptoms such as the endeavor to conceal oneself, dryness of the heart, and flight from the scene. Jugupsa rati is evoked by something contemptuous, leading to disgust. Certain physical transformations are exhibited in this rati, such as spitting, grimacing, and spontaneous words of vilification.
Spitting, grimacing.
Yes. These feelings are only considered transcendental rati when they are favorably bestowed to Krishna. If they are not, they are simply the mundane foibles of the heart of an ordinary mortal. Yeah. So then you see these, you know, very common and all that. So if they're directed towards Krishna favorably, then we'll call them secondary rasa. But if they're not directed towards Krishna, they're not fit, then we generally won't call them secondary rasa. Yes?
Don't really understand the difference between Mukhi and Gona.
Mukhi means primary, Gona means secondary, as far as the terms go.
Yes, but more in terms of how exhibited. Like those ones, disgust and hasya and everything, I always thought that. And Mukhi, how will this be?
It's not that. Mukhi means it's primary, it's always there. Like, let's say, Mother Jashoda. So then, her parental rasa is always there, it's permanent.
So,
but then something like, let's say, fear, you know, Srinivarta starts, you know, blowing and all that, and Krishna, she can't find Krishna, there's fear, you know, or you know, but it's still on the basis of the parental rasa.
So can we say that Mukhi is the five principal rasa?
Yes, Mukhi is the five, and the secondary are those of the Gona. Yeah, that's the clear way. So in this, all seven can function, but of the primary rasas, only one will function, right? Even or unless one has a mixed rasa, but still there'll only be one functioning at a time. You know, there'll be one main one, and then like this. Vrajana, how many bhavas are there in bhakti rasa? There are 8 stai bhavas, 33 sanchari bhavas, 8 sattvika bhavas, which total 49. When these bhavas are mundane, they stem from the 3 modes of material nature, and become the cause of fleeting joys and sorrows. However, when they are dovetailed with Krishna, they become transcendental to the material modes and are sources of profound immortal bliss. Even in shoka, deep despondency, they give forth immense pleasure. Right? Because you're absorbed in Krishna, so you're going to be happy because that's your nature to be connected with Krishna. But you're just tasting it through that particular medium. Yes?
8 stai bhavas?
I'm not sure how he's. We'll see how it
Yeah, maybe it will be described.
Because the point is that that means that they're doing some particular consideration. So some of them may not be able to be something that's maintained. Srila Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna... This is continuing with the Goswami. Okay. Srila Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the Alambana, beloved and lovers, the foundation of Bhakti Rasa, and therefore generate mutual rati in the form of 8 sthayi bhavas of loving attachment. In this way, Krishna and his devotees are the karana, cause of the rasa of rati, spiritual love. So then it appears in here is that that the 8 then means the 5, and then beloved and lover means, you know, vishaya, ashraya, and then the karana. It seems that that's what's being explained here. Because otherwise from there they just move on to the other. Unless he's going to give something more. Does that make sense? So in other words, that's going to be these 8 sthayi bhavas, but then there's the aspect of who is directed towards Krishna, and then the ashraya of that particular rasa. Right? Because that's going to be an element. Because they can also switch back and forth and stuff, like with Krishna and the cowherd boys, and he may be directing at them, they're directing at him. So then that will also be the aspects. And then the cause of that, then what's going to come up, the devotee will be the cause, Krishna will be the cause. Does this make some sense? Yeah. Yeah. So saying the 8 sthayi bhavas, they're not saying 8 rasas. You know, they're just saying like that. The 8 sattvika bhavas, causing the 8 sattvika vikaras, transcendental bodily transformations, beginning with stamba, being stunned in ecstasy, are counted among the karya, effects of rati. And the 33 vyavichari bhavas, sensory bhavas, beginning with nirveda, indifference to material enjoyment, act as sahaya, assistance of this rati. However, in the final analysis, when rasas evidently manifest, these various manifestations of rati are no longer described as karya, karna, cause, karya, effect, and sahaya, assistance, but as vibhava, instigative causes of ecstasy. Right, so we're only discussing it like this because these things are being separately dealt with. Just like I'm talking about how you hold the pan, and then I'm talking about how the kunti is held, how it's moved like that. And then I'm talking about, you know, when you're looking at the vegetables, the effects that you're seeing and like that. So we're studying as 3 separate things, but actually they're not separated. You know, how you're holding the pan, how you're holding the spoon, and how you're moving the vegetables. They all go together. They're one thing. You know, because you change how you're holding the pan, you change how you deal the spoon, you change how the effects. But they're just being there so that we're clear on them. So we also see here is you have the cause. So that's going to be all the aspects of cause. So the ratis and all that, and the alambana and vishaya, I mean the alambana aspect, these are the cause of rasa. Right? Then you're going to see the sattvika bhavas, the anubhavas, that's going to be the effect. So here's just mentioning the sattvika. Because he sees that the physical transformations are there in the anubhavas also. So then you're going to get those aspects. So those are the effect. And then the vyavicharis, they're the assistants. So you can say is that there's 3 clear groups within this whole aspect. Mm-hmm. So then the sthayi bhava and the vibhava become the cause. Then the anubhava, the sattvika bhava become effects. And the vyavichari, they become assistants. So in that way, also, the secondary rasas become assistants. Like that. So. Yeah. So they just each cause the ecstasy, because each one, wherever it is, when that comes up, it causes the development of the ecstasy. And then when that causes transformation, that causes another. It just keeps, all of it just keeps nourishing the other. Just like when we were discussing the Chatavyuha. When you, in Shankarshan, then you're having a knowledge and having a skill and all that. Then you have that, presumably, the proper attitude and the desire. Then when you apply that as Vasudev, you'll get your result, or as Aniruddha, Prayojana. But having gotten the result, now that becomes now part of the field. So it goes back to Pajumna, because now it's part of the attitude of the field. You know, it's just like, I don't have money, I have one attitude. I have money, I have another attitude. Right? So I have the attitude to get the money, but once I get the money, it becomes part of my attitude. And so now that gives rise to further relation, rasa. Is that... So that's the whole point, is that each one of them will give rise to one of the others. If you have the knowledge and skills, that will give rise to the attitude and the desire. That will give rise to effort. That will give rise to getting a result. That will give rise to a further development of that field of action. Right. So the sambandha will then be more enhanced. So that means now your ability in Amideya will be greater. That means your results will be greater. That that result now goes back and becomes a greater part of the field. Right? So each one gives rise to the other. You know, you study them separately, what exactly they do, but they each are causing that enthusiasm, that drive, that impetus, that cause. Furthermore, because nitya, dancing, and other similar manifestation of rati magnify and demonstrate vibhava, they are called anubhavas, resultant manifestations of bhava. Okay. Nitya, dancing, because these come, means the rati is there, or rati is there, that attraction to Krishna. But because from the attraction to Krishna, then you see it magnified as the physical activity, then it's called an anubhava. In other words, the anubhava is that manifestation in which you can perceive in a greater way the attraction, the vibhava. Right? Does that make sense? So you'll see as all these will go back to then the vibhava. They all become part of that, and then that comes out more. So yeah. As pure transcendental bhava manifests the eight sattvika vikaras, these are called sattvika bhavas. The various bhakti, as they manifest, so sattvika vikara means the transformation itself, but the taste one gets from that, that's the bhava. So then it'll be a sattvika bhava. Right, so we see is that many of these, the names, they have different, they're given different names according to how they, where they're playing the role, right? So if the role is that of, just showing what is the physical transformation, then it'll be called a vikara. But when it's showing that, what flavor it adds to it, because then when that comes, that will add to it. And that way you can say it's an anubhava. Right, because it's adding or supporting it's showing the manifestation of the rati. No, because it said anubhava is when the rati is there. There's the attraction to Krishna, and so from that, then there'll be some manifestation in the physical form. Right, so it's a magnification of that. So it's something you can see, like when under magnification, you can see something. So you're able to perceive it. Because otherwise it's in the heart, you may not be able to see it. But because of its external manifestation, then you can see it. So therefore it's called an anubhava. Anu means that it's less or following. So it's you could say it's the secondary manifestation of the vibhava. Right? So in that way then, all these other elements can be called anubhava, because then they're manifestations of that. So even the vyavicharis, then because of something there and a particular affection, these things come up. So in that way, that's why we're saying sometimes the acharyas call them all those three as anubhavas. But how they're coming up, their function is slightly different.
Maharaj, what's the actual meaning of the word vikara?
Vikara, that I know, means transformation. It just means something changes.
Transformation. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's just like you put the that means, yeah, how you say it, you put the pan on the fire, then there's vikara, it becomes hot. Mm-hmm. Then you put the potatoes in the pan, and then they go from white into a slight golden brown. That's vikara. Right? So it just means that transformation. The various bhavas which inject the 33 symptoms, beginning with nirveda, into anubhava rati and vibhava rati, and thus breathe impetus and variegatedness into them, are known as the 33 sensory bhavas, stimulative, exciting ecstasies. Right, so they give more impetus and variety. So that's what's happening. There's a flavor there. Then, within that flavor, these vibhavas will come in, and then they'll create an impetus. So because they're causing the impetus, and they're causing that movement and all that, then that's why they call it, it has the sanchari aspect. We're talking about that, the nature of that sanchari it's different from, or opposed to, just the natural, the flavor that's going on at present. Then they'll be called vyabhicharas, right? But here, it's more pointing out is that it breeds impetus and variegatedness, like that. So it creates something, some change, some movement. Therefore, it's sanchari. Right? Does that make sense? So it just depends upon which aspect they're talking about. Then they'll refer to it as one or the other or both. Ultimately, the Shuddha Bhaktas and Acharyas have identified Vibhava as the root cause of bhakti. Right? So the attraction to Krishna, that's the root aspect. In truth, the transcendental emotion of bhava, being productive of and equivalent to rati, is a subject of inconceivable nature and the arena of the purest form of bhakti. Right? Because the attraction to, and then that experience gained from that attraction, they're non-different. Right? Does that make sense? So one causes the other, that they're the same thing, they're just different aspects of the same. Scriptures such as the Mahabharata have defined deified bhava as transcendentally pure and spotless, enthroning it upon a pedestal beyond the jurisdiction of empirical speculation and analysis. Therefore, the scriptures recommend that one not to encroach upon this inconceivable knowledge through inductive philosophy and rhetoric. So one shouldn't try to analyze it just with the mundane logic. Oh, but this doesn't make sense, and why would this happen, and oh, but why is it called, you know, it's just saying one shouldn't do that. That's the whole point. Recommend one should not encroach upon the inconceivable knowledge through inductive philosophy and rhetoric. Because we're starting from our own position. You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, you have the aspect of the devotee doesn't want liberation because the taste of devotional service is so great, there's no interest in liberation. Then we, from our inductive position, are thinking that the material world's a place of misery, I want to get out of this, go back to Godhead where it's nice. But if I don't want liberation, does that mean I stay here and I don't want to stay here, so this doesn't sound right, or I don't like this? Right? So that's what it's meaning. You won't be able to appreciate it from this inductive position. It's only appreciated when it's seen in the context of Krishna. So when we're always looking at, well, what I'll gain from it, that's the part that devotees are dropping. That it's about pleasing Krishna, that's the part they're keeping. And then point is that you're connected. Krishna is Ananda. we're connected to Krishna and we're part and we're of nature as Ananda also, why we wouldn't be then very satisfied? Does that make sense? But because we look at it from the inductive, we look at it, my situation now and how I want to adjust it to something else, when it's just a matter of, no, acting in your natural nature. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, the drop of the fish is out of the water. And so then you come up with all kinds of things you should do to make the fish happy. But all you have to do is put the fish in water and it's happy. And, Rati is the enchanting element in the paradigm of rasa. It colors Krishna's beauty, qualities, and pastimes with the hues of Vibhava, thus nourishing Vibhava along with itself. So, the rati itself, that by being attracted to Krishna, then because of that attraction, then it then creates, how you say, it gives the enthusiasm or nourishment of Vibhava, and that the different qualities of Krishna, the activities he does, and anything connected with Krishna, that becomes special. It's because of your attraction. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say there's something that you're inspired by. And so, you know, therefore the thing looks, let's take another one. Ownership turns sand into gold. Mm-hmm. Yeah? No? Or possession turns sand into gold. You know this one? No?
Sorry, I don't
know. Now we know he's fake.
I was thinking, you'd be the first one.
It's the first time I hear it.
Really?
Ownership transcends into gold. What's that supposed to mean?
Means, let us say there's a field of sand. Nobody cares.
Well, because it's yours.
But now it's yours. I say, okay, you can have this field of sand. Okay. Now it becomes gold.
Like growing eggplant in the desert in Israel.
Yeah. Like that, because then you'll do something with it. You know, you'll turn it into a big sandbox, like that, or a playground for the kids, or...
Is it British or American?
Possession? I generally think most of these things are British. I'm not sure American has many that are its own like that.
Russia's same thing.
Yeah, so it must be kind of a European kind of aspect in some aspect. But so that's the whole, just like, let us say your kid's there yelling and screaming, you know, you tolerate it, it goes on. But, you know, sitting next to you on the other side, the other person in the airport, his kid is yelling and screaming, you're thinking, why doesn't he control his kid? You know, what kind of parents are these, you know, all that. So that's the thing, possession makes it, gives that specialness. That's the point of the Vibhava. So it becomes attractive. You know? Kid does something foolish, everybody is attracted more, laughs, oh, isn't that cute? But if someone else's kid is kind of like, what an idiot. Right? So that's the whole point, is being there, is that Rati nourishes Vibhava because of the attraction, and then Vibhava, because of all those different elements of it, it nourishes Rati. So they mutually nourish each other. That's the amazing thing. So it's not something that's brought up and attained. It's just something the way it is. So we can be brought into this. It's not that, how you say? It's how you say? It's not, in one sense, in this context, it's not a transformation. That's what he's saying. It's just you purify the heart. And then Krishna reveals, and it's just, that's the way it is. Right? You can show the steps of purification and how the things become revealed, but in actuality, it's just that this is always there. It's always been there. We just become aware of it. So, So that's why logic and this inductive method will never understand it. Because inductive means I see it in the context of my position. You know, like that. Rather than I'm I'm becoming aware of what's actually the fact, what's the position. Krishna's beauty, qualities, and pastimes are the mainstay of Madhurya Rasa. Initially, Rati manifests the ecstatic beauty of Krishna, and after the beauty has been relished, Bhava in his variegatedness turns around and reciprocally enhances Rati. Right? So because of the attraction, then Krishna becomes very beautiful. Because of that, you get the honor bhavas, style, and sattvika bhavas, all these other aspects. And because of that, then that enhances the attraction to Krishna. Therefore, in conclusion, all the divisions of bhava, vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, and sanchari, vyabhichari bhava, give support to rati and vice versa. So you can discuss one or the other, but actually then they all are the thing. So that's why it'll just say rati, because it's not, because from that everything else comes. Sometimes it talks bhava, sometimes it talks rasa. It's just a matter of in the conversation what they were talking about, so they use the particular word, but it all means the same. So, yes.
This also scientifically explains why those who have sthayi bhav never want to change it.
Yes.
Because the experience they get, it nourishes their rati.
Yes.
So it increases in itself.
Yes.
So why would anybody think of changing it?
Yes. That's a very good. So that one you have to. How you say?
Write down and put on that.
Yeah, you just put, when you're going to give your lecture, there's this huge backdrop that says this in it. Why is that then? Spiritual and material rasa. Vrajanath. Gurudev, kindly explain to us the differences between Krishna Rati, loving attachment for Krishna, and Vishaya Rati, attachment for material objects like enjoyment. Goswami, Vishaya, so you can say is we are nicely situated in Rati, and by that Rati and that application, it becomes nourished and becomes greater and greater and all that. It unfortunately just happens to be Vishaya Rati. the more you get, the more you want. Okay. Goswami. Do we say Vishaya Rati? Attachment for material objects and enjoyments, right? Goswami, Vishaya Rati is worldly and gross. Krishna Rati is supramundane and purely spiritual. The roots of Krishna Rati are the extraordinary in transcendence. Worldly love is felt as pleasure when the lovers are united and as pain when they are separated. When Krishna Prema blossoms in the pure devotee's heart, rasa is churned up to produce nectarian bliss. In the mood of separation, this bliss acquires wonderful nuances. During the conversation between Sri Chaitanya and Srila Ramananda Rai, the latter composed a poem in reply to the question of Mahaprabhu. The poem, given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8.194, describes the fascinating facets of Viparlamba, bliss and separation, in some detail. A whisper of grief is seemingly presented in these lines, but in reality they are descriptions of intense exaltation. Footnote 43. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 9.194, it is stated, "Alas, before we met, there was an initial attachment between us brought about by an exchange of glances. In this way, attachment evolved. That attachment has gradually grown, and there is no limit to it. Now that attachment has become a natural consequence between ourselves. It is not that it is due to Krishna, the enjoyer, nor is it due to me, for I am the enjoyed. It is not like that. This attachment was made possible by mutual meeting. This mutual exchange of attraction is known as Manobhava, or Cupid. Krishna's mind and my mind have merged together. Now, during this time of separation, it is very difficult to explain these loving affairs. My dear friend, Although Krishna might have forgotten all these things, you can understand and bring this message to him. But during our first meeting, there was no messenger between us, nor did I request anyone to see him. Indeed, Cupid's five arrows were our via media. Now, during this separation, that attraction has increased to another ecstatic state. My dear friend, please act as a messenger on my behalf, because if one is in love with a beautiful person, this is the consequence. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. These verses were originally composed and sung by Ramananda Rai himself. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that during the time of conjugal enjoyment, the attachment might be compared to Cupid himself. However, during the period of separation, Cupid becomes a messenger of highly elevated love. This is called Prema Vilas Vivarta. When there is separation, conjugal enjoyment itself acts like a messenger, and that messenger was addressed by Srimati Radharani as a friend. Right? So there's a slight difference in the flavor, though, as it says, it's intense exaltation. But there's a difference in flavor, because the one is that as Cupid is the you know, how you say, the interaction, it itself is Cupid, or Cupid himself. But when there's separation, then Cupid becomes the messenger to connect. Does that make any sense? Or? Yeah, so slightly different flavor. Same transcendental ecstasy, but the flavor is slightly different. So one you call Sambho, one you call Pipalamba. So it appears here has gives symptoms like one's in distress in that here. So that's why then sometimes this way is the question of why, you know, why would we want this? But that is a inductive, logical analysis. It's not actually what's going on. And so here then it explains in the nature of the flavor that itself is just a matter of is it Cupid or is Cupid the medium? Like that. But it's, yeah.
Is Cupid here considered to be commative?
Yes.
Commative.
Yes, yes.
When we chant our Gayatri, become a Gayatri, we meditate on Krishna as Cupid himself.
Yes.
So is it in the position of Sambhog or Vipralamba?
Yes. It means all that, because the Kama Gayatri means that the manifestation of all those pastimes between, you know, between Krishna and Srimati Radharani.
Because he's shooting the arrows, you know, he's doing everything
yes.
in there.
Yeah, he's the Cupid, but at the same time is then he becomes the medium for that. Because you have attraction to Krishna, but at the same time this is you can speak about it, about the attraction to Krishna. Let us say there's something you like to eat. Okay?
Simple example.
Yeah, have to bring it home.
Come on, guy, let's say something.
Yes, okay. You know. So, something you really, really like. And so when you have it, then you're enjoying that, and that enjoyment is one entity.
Yes.
Right? Now let's say you're super hungry. There's no food. And you've gotten so hungry, it's come to the point where you're thinking about this particular special food, right? That's how you know you're really hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're a little hungry, you think about normal things to eat, or, you know, like that. When you get super hungry, you start thinking about the
most specific.
Yeah, very specific. So then in that, it's directed towards, but at the same time as it's the medium for directing. You're thinking about it, and it's about, you know, oh, if you only had this and that. So you can even talk to that preparation. Does this mean anything?
Yeah.
Okay. We've been this hungry. No?
Tomorrow.
No, actually, tomorrow is a Kadashi, but on Dwadashi we will meditate.
Well, it depends. Depends how late into the codices. If it means without meaning near jhala, if you're no water, no food, yeah. Then as you know, towards the as the day goes on, by the afternoon, then one starts to take on these symptoms of ecstatic bliss. You know.
Begins from tonight, man. Already meditating tomorrow.
Just as a practical example in my own experience, when I used to cook Prabhupada's feast in Melbourne, I would choose Nirjali Kadashi to write down the menu.
Planning ahead because you're the most hungry.
Because my mind was so sharp, I come up with all these.
Yeah. And you could get down to exactly what would go with what, and whether you use this or that, and different things. Yeah, no, that's very good. Yeah. Yeah, well, Prabhupada mentions that if you're not hungry, you don't cook so well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark.
Yes.
So in this description, Kamadeva is a separate entity. It's not Krishna.
It's Krishna, but it's also a separate entity.
Oh.
Because Krishna is Cupid, so you can talk about that aspect of Cupid and Krishna. It's just part of the transcendental ecstasy. You know, just like, let's say, or... okay. You know, it means as is it here in this situation, but we're giving the example from the Vishayarati, is the boy and girl have been together, now they're separated. Now the girl's remembering the boy, and then talking, she may be like talking in her mind to the boy and how if they were together, it would be so nice, they'd be happy, and when they were together like this, it was so great, and things like that.
Yeah.
You understand? So in other words, The being together is Cupid, but at the same time as Cupid is also has that separate, so the simultaneous one in difference. So the Kama Gayatri therefore will be Krishna, but at the same time as it's also the aspect of Cupid, you know, that dynamic aspect is there. So he is Cupid, but at the same time as he can be that medium through which you can appreciate him. And does that make sense? But it also then mentions that depending on it, that the Kama Gayatri also represents Radharani. Because she's the one that's attracted to these three features of Krishna.
I never heard that explanation.
No?
No.
No?
I did.
You did?
Ah, okay, so... See, when it comes to transcendence, he's heard. When it's come to just, you know, a few...
Sand and gold.
Sand and gold, yeah.
Okay.
No?
I didn't hear it, but...
Oh, okay. So that is also something that... Because you could say is that... What they say, oh, so it's about Radharani. No, the point is that... Means, how is this the manifestation of Braja Krishna? It's because Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. That means somebody must be there that sees him in that way. Therefore, he's manifesting. So for us to see Krishna in these features of Govinda, Gopinath, Madan, Mohan, is because that's the mood of Radharani. Right? And so those features, Samadhan, Abhidhe, and Prayojan, are always going to be there. But you don't see that in Dwarka, because the residents of Dwarka don't see him in that way. He doesn't manifest. In Vaikuntha, he doesn't manifest. So in that way, you can say as a Kama Gayatri is Radharani, because of her Rati for Krishna, therefore these aspects are these three aspects are manifest. Does that mean? Yeah, so like that. The same time as it's Krishna, because he is the one who's Krishna, Pushpavanaya, and Ananga. And the same time as that, he's also then, there's that, and that's Sambhog in the medium, he's also there because he's the connection between the two. You know, it's just like in the Brahma Gita, Radharani's talking you know, to Krishna, at the same time as, you know, talking through this bumblebee. Because Krishna is, he is the Sambandha, he is the Abhideya, he is the Prayojana. So there's not a problem in seeing him in these flavors. But they each give a different flavor. So there's a different flavor in Govinda and Gopinath and Madhavan, though it's one person. That's why you see in that I'm not sure, maybe it's in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, maybe, where it's talking about the Purva Rag of Radharani. And so then in there, Radharani is very distraught, because she thinks she's a very unchaste girl, because somehow or another she's attracted to three different boys. Right? You know, because she's heard about his features as Madan Mohan. She's attracted. She heard about his features as Govinda. She's attracted. And Gopinath. She doesn't know, because she hasn't met Krishna. So she thinks it's three different people. Right? And then at some point it's either revealed or explained that no, it's one person. So, yeah, so that's the whole point of that. This is where the that principle of everything's Krishna then has its natural, its spontaneous form. That's the origin. From that comes down to just seeing here and the Shanta Ras and all these different things and the philosophy and the knowledge of that and all those different things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's then what's there, but its natural, original form is that. Krishna being everything, then in everything he's there, but it gives different flavors. Because you can see is otherwise, why is there the Vyabhichari Bhavas? Why is there all this? Because it just gives the flavors. It gives the variety. So if we're talking about unlimited, then you have unlimited combinations. Okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that during the time of conjugal enjoyment, the attachment might be compared to Cupid himself. However, during the pet period of separation, Cupid becomes the messenger of highly elevated love. This is called Prema Vilasati Varta. When there is a separation, conjugal enjoyment itself acts as a messenger, and that messenger was addressed by Srimati Radharani as a friend. The essence of this transaction is that transcendental loving affairs are as relishable during separation as during conjugal enjoyment. So that's what he's trying to point. They're the same. It's just a different flavor of it. When Srimati Radharani was fully absorbed in love of Krishna, she mistook a black tamal tree for Krishna and embraced it. Such a mistake is called prema vilasati varta. You know, so we talk about it. This is the, you know, so that's the technical name. And that's what's happening. So the tree becomes the medium. The tree becomes the friend. Though it's Krishna. So that's the whole point, is that for the devotee, everything reminds him of Krishna. So there's nothing here that doesn't, can't be seen in that concept of prema vilasati varta. So that's why when devotees move, you know, Sukadeva Goswami moves, he's got everything he sees reminds him of Krishna. So then, because he's being requested, then he takes on and then he sees the differentiation and he's seeing the mechanical aspects of things so that people can use that from their inductive position to get to the transcendental platform. So then he acts as a Madhyamakara. Does that make sense? So there, the variety is there, but it all reminds you of Krishna, because Krishna is everything. And each different thing may give a different aspect of remembrance and the flavor it gives and everything like that. Yes? No? Yes, right now, the essay question. Explain and give a personal example of your absorption in prema vilasati varta.
No? You can just copy Jagadananda Pandit's book. Prema vilasati varta.
Here it is.
It's interesting in the context of Jagadama, because they go to Goswami every day.
Mm-hmm.
They ask him questions, and he answers their questions. Then they go back home, and then they do their sadhana. And they experience or try to get in the mood of what he told them, what all these different symptoms are.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go back the next day, and then they want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
Until at the end, one goes into Shakyabhava, and the other one goes into Gopibhava.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it's progressive.
Yes, it's progressive. Because point is you're taking the deductive and bringing it down to the position of where the individual is at. So it's the deductive is applied to the inductive position, but you don't use the inductive method. Because the inductive means you're starting with yourself and then trying to include Krishna. So in the beginning we'll do that. But actually you see what the acharyas are doing, they never do that. They always take the deductive and then bring it down through examples in that to our position. So that's what would be the difference. That's why you see when Prabhupada explains something, that it always has that transcendental feeling to it. Like that. Even if he's discussing, you know, an issue or this or that. It's not inductive. It's always seen in the context of how it relates to Krishna. Yes.
Nowadays, educators in ISKCON, they discuss it's a big issue now that deductive is universal.
Yes.
But then inductive, it's very, individual.
Yes.
So then to bring universal into individual, you need, you know, educational program, which they try to develop. But the difficulty, the main difficulty seems to be, is that when there's an open forum, individually people on different levels of their own development, spiritual development.
Right.
So although it is universal as deductive method, we can't bring it into, you know, personal life of a specific devotee because it's too general. So
So now you've gotten three out of four aspects here. So that's the point. In the first, when you first talked about it, you only dealt with two. This last one you just explained, you mentioned three. What's missing is the fourth.
So what is it?
The fourth means, you mentioned that the deductive is general.
Yes.
And then the inductive is individual.
Yes.
But then when you're trying to deal with a group, it's general.
Yes.
Okay. But the point is the deductive only general?
No. It could be specific also.
Could be, but what's the origin of deductive? Krishna, the person.
Yeah.
Then you have Paramatma, then you have Brahman. So the problem is they're only seeing the educational process through the Brahman aspect. The absolute is only Brahman for them. It's only general. And then they're seeing their individuality as the primary aspect. Hence the inductive.
Mm-hmm.
So actually what they're doing is they're trying to figure out how to connect inductive to deductive, not the other way around.
Mm.
Then they're noticing that, but then if I look at it from my perspective, my inductive perspective, my specific personal, everyone else is general. So the only way you can resolve that is if Krishna is the person. So the point is Krishna is a person, why doesn't that relate to every individual? They're taking it that's general. I'm the one that's unique and special and all that, and the whole universe has to adjust for me. But the point is that, no, Krishna's the person. We're a person. You can relate to that. You know? And they're taking the conditioning as the main thing rather than the spiritual. Because if you are educating the soul, then using example of the conditioning. But the point is using example in one area, people can apply it into their area if it's close enough.
Yeah.
But this thing is, if you're not doing that, it's about the individual. And you're dealing on that, then unless it's exactly about them, they won't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difficulty. It's not understood what is the thesis, where it comes from, the personal aspect, the reasoning for it. That's the paramount. Then you get down to the Brahman aspect. In other words, you're dealing with their generic. The other aspect is even their conditioning is individual. Where does it come from? It comes from the primary creation. So it's very generic. You know, they're saying, oh, but I'm an individual. But you're an individual made of parts. It's just like I bring, let's say, a preparation is cooked, and I bring it before an expert cook. Now, for the person who's not so good, this is completely unique preparation that's never been seen before because I just made it up myself. But for the cook, it's made out of all the elements that are just standard in cooking. And they can tell you exactly what it is. And they could replicate it right there, probably make it even better. Is that? Yeah. So that's the difficulty, is that we're not actually appreciating a Chintaveda Veda Tattva. Is that, that the point is it is Krishna. He's a person. We're a person. And so you can relate on that practical place. All souls can relate to that. Now, it's just the flavor, the mood, that's going to be what you're going to deal with. That's going to be a general thing. So you give a particular topic or this or that, you're going to have that kind of general kind of audience that's there. So there's going to be something in common. And so then you give your examples in that context, and everybody will start to be able to get. And if they don't, someone else asks a question, you give a different example. At some point, everybody catches it. But so the point is that they're analyzing it too much and not enough. You know? That's the problem with this material, the inductive analyzation, that's what I mentioned before, is that it's not enough because it doesn't include Krishna and the whole descending process properly, and it's too much because they get into too much mechanical detail on the mundane platform. And they don't understand. Mundane, the secondary creation is made up of the elements of the primary. You understand the primary, you understand the whole secondary. You know, you can cook 100 preparations, and a cook understands all of them. And it's all the same thing, just a variety within that. It's made out of the same elements. It's just proportions and that. You may leave one thing out of this or something out of that, but it's the same. Does that make sense? So that's the important aspect, is that it's seen that when you're dealing with the descending, it's Krishna's created this. He's there. He's expanded his energies. He's entered into them. He makes them, pulls them together. He's created all these things. So the 8,400,000, the 14 planetary systems, then, you know, the ocean side, the valleys, the mountains, the forests, you know, the river, all these things Krishna's created. And so those are the situations in which it's going to be. It's not going to be something else. Right? But we're looking at it, oh, I'm so individual, I'm unique and all that. It says, no, we're not. That's illusion. So that's the whole point, is that they're getting bewildered by looking at stuff, by studying you know, this inductive educational process from the materialists, and then getting bewildered themselves because they're not able to see Krishna in it. They're not able to separate the milk from the water. Does that make sense?
This is Taoism.
Yeah.
This is Taoist philosophy, 100%.
Which?
The aspect that you mentioned, which is not Krishna conscious.
Yes. Yeah. They're seeing just the mechanical, but they're not even seeing that far. Like, you're giving them a lot of credit that it goes up to the Tao. Because there's a good chance, even if they do, they can see Qi, but they can't see Li. And they're definitely not seeing Wu. That's why it's woo. That's where it came from. Master, what do you know? You know. Yeah, so when the master got the realization, he goes, woo. Master, what was that? The complete effort. Yeah. Yes.
That's why in the Paramatma Sandarbha, when the cause of creation as the Lord is mentioned, so it is proved that Krishna is both the efficient and material cause.
Yes.
Most of the other philosophies, they don't have problem with accepting Krishna as the efficient cause, but to accept as material cause. And we also have the problem to understand that Krishna is the gross effect himself as the material cause.
Yes.
And also, while explaining or seeing the context of the jiva, we only see the secondary qualities. Mm. But Jiva Goswami only mentions the primary qualities. As far as the secondary qualities, he only mentions how the Jiva is covered by Maya Shakti through Ahankara. He doesn't mention any more secondary qualities.
You don't have to. Yes. Which way it is, it's just like, if the guy's covered in a pile of rubble, you don't have to say specifically what rubble it is. He's covered. You know.
So our education is more like, all we need to is uncover the things rather than imposing something on the person that he has to learn something new.
Yeah.
We're removing what is not supposed to be there. So,
yes, very good. There's also in here, there's a weakness, because then in this approach also, that means that you were talking about this modern educational approach, is the individual thinks he's the center of the whole process rather than he's part of the process. So in the Upanishad, then it mentions that you have the teacher, you have the student, and then the medium for that is knowledge itself, right? So it's one of the, it's, you know, part of the whole, you know, aspects of the Purusha, the Jnanamai Purusha and all that, is that you have knowledge, that's the joint between the two. So they have to try to understand it, the one has to try to present it. So this idea is that they'll just sit there, and I'm the, and when you entertain me and you impress me and everything like that, then it was very good, and that's good education. But it's, they have to make an effort themselves. They have to try. You know. So that's also a point there. So that's the difficulty a lot of times in the modern education. Who's trying? I mean, it's the ones that are trying. They're sitting at the front, and everybody, you know, the teacher likes them, and everybody else thinks they're an idiot. You know, so you have some major flaws here, because they're not understanding the metaphysical and the spiritual and its origin in Krishna. So Krishna's there. From him comes the spiritual. From him comes the metaphysical. From him comes the external, the secondary material. Yeah, because that's a big problem. Yeah, except for, let's say, the Tao, Buddhism, they don't have so much a problem with this being the material cause, because they don't think there is a spiritual cause, nothing. But in the others, they do, so it's the opposite. It's the karma. It's that he's there, God is good, so anything bad can't be connected with God. And so then they have a big problem with that. You know, especially that made famous by that one rabbi with his book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People. You know, so he...
His name is Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, something like that. Yeah, that's what I heard.
That's fine. So in there, then they're trying to reconcile, so that's where you get the deification and this and that, putting God at a distance, he's not in control, he's, you know, he's God, but at the same time he's not complete. But we still love him anyway. You know. But basically in that, I think only the Jews would be able to use that philosophy. I don't think that the others could use it properly. Because, you know, it's just like you see, is that in the Old Testament, everybody still likes Moses or Abraham or Isaac, and because they all made some major mistakes. But everybody's still cool. But you see, when you get in the New Testament, unless someone's squeaky clean, then, you know, they can't tolerate them at all. As soon as there's any flaw, they're thrown out. So, you know.
Also in Mahabharata, if you look, each character, they actually did huge mistakes. Yeah. Bhishma and Yudhishthira, yeah. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is everybody makes mistakes, but that we're not these mistakes for the soul. So the soul can go on to perfection. And the point is yes, we're making mistakes, but it's your endeavor to try to do it properly. That's the glory. It's not that you've made a mistake, it's that what you do with it. So it's not that it's lemons, it's that you make lemon juice out of the lemons. Right? Isn't that? That's what they tell me.
I heard it before.
You heard that? Yeah. I have heard it. The sage is...
Yes. Because just recently I was reading one book about Srila Prabhupada, and there's a mention that in an open forum he gave devotees personal instructions. And I was thinking, how is that? And they actually accepted it as their life and soul. And I was thinking, how is that even possible? Because everybody's expecting, you know, personal instructions. It can't happen in an open forum. But Srila Prabhupada did it. And, you know, it appears that it was like regular practice for him.
Yeah. So the thing is, so therefore then what would we have to add into this? Because we're talking about, okay, we mentioned our weakness there. Then what is it that Prabhupada sees that is not included in this method? Because we see the external form of the method has only two features. Mm-hmm. I am the person and knowledge is the impersonal. Then if we get into it, then we look at it, we introduce the aspect of the teacher-student relationship, then you add in, you know, that it becomes generic. Then they're also general. It's just a matter of which perspective you're looking at it, who's the general and who's the individual. So we mentioned, what's the fourth element that's missing from this?
Association of others too.
No, that's there, because that's down on this the lower level.
But Krishna is a person.
Krishna is a person. What does, how does Prabhupada view? Krishna is a person. So therefore, then when you see Krishna as a person, then that generic knowledge can be given to a general audience individually.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's all complete in itself. Because the point is if you're talking to the souls, you're talking knowledge of the soul to the souls. Every soul that's there is an individual, and they can individually take that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing, is within the general is the individual, within the individual is the general. But we have to know is the individual is more prominent than the general. It's the origin. So they're looking at it the other way around. The general is there, and that gets in the way of the person, because they're thinking that's the main, and then you have the individual. No, it's the individual, then you have general. You know, it's made up of individuals, and they're as far as general. So then why is it knowledge would be general unless it's coming from an individual? So then it would go, so then naturally then from that, the next point would be is that therefore the key element in teaching is Krishna consciousness. The more you're Krishna conscious, then the more you can teach Krishna conscious knowledge. It's not how much you know, what degree you have, what technique you know. Is how Krishna conscious. Therefore, purity is the force. So if they're unable to do that in that, that means they're not being Krishna conscious about their knowledge. They're clicking into some mundane kind of educational kind of mode and then not getting it to work, because where are these techniques coming from? Right? I mean, some may be picking up from, you know, secondary education, or some from primary. Most not. They'll be picking up from university level stuff, right?
Yeah.
Who's in the university? Everybody?
A few people.
Yeah. And which, and you know, so therefore, it's a limited audience, right? Either they have the money to be there, the intelligence to be there, you know, something. And then it's divided up into a class. So one professor is only dealing with one particular group. You know, it's about science, you're only dealing with science. You know, science, people are into math. Right? So, therefore, it's not that as applicable. The details, in other words, unless you can separate the principle from the details, they'll not be able to glean anything from these educational systems. You take details, very rarely they'll ever work. Because when do you have the same situation? You know, hardly ever do you ever have the same situation. Therefore, then you have to see the principles. Krishna is the principle. He is the one that, therefore, from him comes the secondary principles of the metaphysical, and then from that the tertiary of then, you know, what's going on in the material world. Because he is Bhagavan, is the first, then Paramatma, then Brahma. So unless it's seen in this way, because inductive means you're seeing the other way. You have to see from Krishna down, not from Brahman up. Otherwise, the Brahman is brilliant. You can't see past it. So that becomes a difficulty. Is that then it comes down to the qualification. The other thing is the technique that makes the teaching. No, it's the qualification. And if you look in history of any great educators, it's been their quality, not their technique. Because of their quality, they've developed a technique. And I think I use the technique, I'll get the same effect. Right? It's just like, you know, I've seen the guy, he's got, he's you know, a race car driver, and he's got this fancy car with a big engine and this and that, and he can do all these fancy things and all that. So I think if I get that same car, I can do all those same things.
Yeah.
You know? You always see pictures of the guy gets in his Lamborghini, revs it up, all his friends, yeah, you know, they're all watching. He drives about 50 feet and runs into a tree. You know? So that's the point, you know. There's a saying, if a rich man wears brass, everyone will think it's gold. And if a poor man wears gold, everyone will think it's brass. Has the sage heard this one? That's a Bengali saying.
Must be an Indian thing.
It's a Bengali saying.
Also, another point on that, the interaction between teacher and students, now it's focus is shifted more to the qualification of the student, not necessarily on the qualification of the teacher.
Yes.
So if students are qualified, then we're able, you know, to do something, but if not, then we just, we don't touch them.
But you have to be able to make a student. It means you have to have both. They have to be, in other words, the student has to be such that the teacher can work with them to get an effect. But the point is it's not the technique, it's the personality. Because what do you use? You know, it's just like, let's say, like you're cooking. You go to make a preparation in one way, something goes wrong. You start to adjust. Let's say you're cooking in the pan and it burns. Now what do? Right? You know, you have other techniques to get around that. You know, you take that, whatever's there, and you take that pan, you know, like that, take another frying pan and just turn it over into that. And then whatever's stuck on the bottom, you throw it away. You know, or the milk burns, you just immediately pour what's on the top off, and then you know, don't scrape it, you know, and then, you know, stuff. You know, you can do things. You wanted to do a certain thing, but that won't work, you know. So you know, you wanted to cut it, but there's no good knife, so you grate it. You know, so, like that, you know. So it's just, you wanted to make a paste out of it, you know, a particular spice, but you can't. So you can dry grind it into a powder and then add water to it. But that's because you know cooking and know the effects and all that. So that's the point, is we're thinking is that the technique is what makes it work. No, it's the attitude that makes it work. You want to teach, you'll figure out a way to get it across. Is that something sense?
Yeah.
So that's why you deal on a level that works for the individual. Because the point is when you deal to the general crowd, it still includes that. Because you're not just, it's not just generic, just that, it's a generic of this group. It's not a generic of another group. So they're saying it's just general, but it's general with this in these individuals. Does that make sense? So, yeah.
I think there's a, in Prabhu's line of thoughts, to me there's something majorly missing in the educational system. It's not just what we teach to the student, but what they're going to do with the knowledge afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And no one actually cares about this.
No, because it's because their job's on. As long as you're getting paid or what you're getting your benefit, then what does it matter?
You know, you pass your bhakti shastra, you pass your bhakti vaibhav, you did your bhakti sarvabhava.
Yeah.
What do you do with it?
Yeah. No, well, it's just like, it's the modern thing. If you have money, then everything works. You get married, you'll be happy. You have money, you'll be happy. You get a house, you'll be happy. But how you live as Grihastha, how you deal with money, how you deal with it, that's never considered. But that's depends also how you teach it. You teach it in the descending method, then you see how to use it, because then you always see how it connects to Krishna.
Right.
But if it's just a matter of memorizing facts and figures, what do you do with facts and figures? You have to do something with facts and figures are only in the Sambandha, then you have to apply it. And you have to know how you are who you are in the equation, and that's not taught either. Someone can say time, place, circumstance. They take in the circumstances, what's outside them. They're the circumstance. You know, it's that's the whole thing. We take it. Time, place, and circumstance, I'm controlled by something else. Time and place, yes, but you're the circumstance.
Yeah.
Like that. You're the patra. You're the one that's going to do. And then you have different tools that you can work with. But the point is, if you can't work with those tools, it won't work, so that because it's dependent on you. Okay. So these things aren't taught. But they're thinking they're being really practical. I'm not sure how it is wadding up paper and throwing it into a garbage can and getting points for that. I'm not sure how that furthers knowledge, but somehow or another it's popular. So that's the difficulty. They're going in and they're catching the water, not the milk. Like that. Because if you're seeing, they'll see, oh, it's so different. That means you're definitely at water. Because Veda means it's actual knowledge. That means you could study any educator who's successful and seeing what it is and what you pull out from them, it'll always be consistent with everybody else. Because it's knowledge, it's Veda. But that's the thing, you have to know how to pull the Veda aspect and leave the water. So then they end up not doing. So then, and what does it do? It gives rise to speculation. Speculation is tasty. You can't teach, but you can talk about it, and then speculate why you can't teach. And you get some taste out of it. So you can taste it, talk with other people who can't educate, they all sit together and talk. Does that make sense? So it's about talking, not about Siddhanta. Because Siddhanta means get your act together, become serious as a devotee, then you'll be able to present Krishna consciousness. That's so you can present it into the degree that you have faith in it. You don't have faith. You know, you're it's this and that could be this, that means you can't teach anybody that. You could give them doubts. You have doubts. You could give them your value of doubts. But you won't be able to give them faith. So therefore, without faith, you can't use it. So generally, also another aspect that he's talking about here is that you don't get to the practical. They don't actually finish Shravana. Shravana means you clear all doubts and misgivings. At least to the point where now you can practically use it. So that's the whole point. You're trying to clear doubts so they use it. When they use it and continue that contemplation process, then they'll realize it now becomes a value. Now it's something they do inherently. Right? I've never heard the saying, how you say? Values are what you do when no one's watching. Mm-hmm. Like that. Yeah. Because that means it's come to Nididhyasana. You value it. You're going to do it whether anyone's there or not. So that's the whole thing. So Vedic education means you have to take it all the way through. And then who teaches this? The person who's come to that third level. Then they teach.
Yes. They have to be realized.
Yes. So the problem is we're just giving facts and figures. So they just work out different ways to train people in the thing by different tricks. Like I remember the original books in math that we used, I can't remember what their name was. But there were some books printed in the 30s. And it was just straightforward math, really solid, everything, how it moved through, everything was really, really good. Not one picture in the whole thing. Just a small book, fat book, small book, you know, one of those really small books, but really little fat, had everything in it. Then I see they're coming along and printing, you know, for the ISKCON math things, all pictures and this and that. Most of it's pictures, because they say the kids can't concentrate on the math. So it's just tricks. So it's not, you know, you have to get through, why are you studying this math? What's it for? What's it doing? That's got to be the first thing. So you have to start there, what it's for. Because if you don't see what the goal is, why will you make an endeavor to get there? Because otherwise, at the same time as they were having to use that, you know, let's say you have a mathematical, you mean you want to give them so many math, let's say, practices, right? Because you have to practice math. So we'd have a cube. would be, let's say, 10 by 10. You know, I mean, small kids are smaller, big kids would be bigger. Let's say even small kids, 6 by 6 or something. So it's got 6 numbers across and 6 numbers down, all the way back. So it has all those numbers there. Then you start off and, okay, we're doing addition. So add all the numbers in the first line. Let's then add the numbers in the second line, the third line, fourth line. Then go to the first line from top to bottom and add it. You know, so you can just get, you can do that multiplication, division, subtraction. So this one little cube can keep you busy for weeks. But you'd have to have, you know, and what does that take? You just make that one thing, work it out, print it out, you're done. Right? But the other thing is that you have to go to this whole thing and the layout and this and that, and then when those pictures are boring, no one wants to see those anymore, then your whole math course is finished. So when the students want to learn, then very simple it can be. So that's why the modern doesn't necessarily think there was much going on in the Veda, because they didn't need any tricks. They needed nothing. A place to sit down, a teacher and a student, a body of knowledge, Aribal, it was done. No tricks. So that's the thing, is they're trying to figure out what tricks to make it. No, it's just a matter of you just come in, crash in, and just make it clear what's there. And you create an atmosphere. In other words, everybody's on their own wavelength. You have to create that they're all on the same, they all are starting to see how to think. Because also the modern, they don't teach you how to think. It's indirectly what's going to be your benefit. They don't know how to teach a mood, an attitude, a perspective. In other words, you have a, you know, the hermeneutics of you know, the Vaishnava, how we look at it. That has to be given. Because they're using these modern academic, which is, well, you know, could be this, could be that, and, you know, don't say too much, encourage everybody. You know, these are nice elements, but only nice if they're in context of the Vaishnava philosophy and culture. On their own, they're nice platitudes, but the, you know, they won't happen. You know, they're just not going to happen. So that's the difficulty. So they don't clear doubts. That's why you see is they don't like question and answer. The modern thing doesn't like question and answer, because it could be outside of the context of what they prepared for. But the point is if you're going to make it practical, you've said something that's triggered something in somebody. They ask a question. That's how they're going to apply it. You can answer that. Now they can apply it, but they don't like to deal with that. So that's why this more dialectic, where you speak and then question, it runs according to that. Rather than, no, we in this week we have these 5 lessons, we've got to get through this much material, this and that. And then how much are you going to get through? You know, I mean, you know, absorb. But if it's, you work at the level they absorb, yes, at the beginning you'll be slower, at the end they'll even go quicker. Is that? Okay. Here's the technical. How many spiritual rasas are there? Goswami, there is one Mukhya Rati, which is divided into 5 principal rasas, plus the 7 Gona rasas, thus making a total of 8. So that's when it says the 7 rasas or 7 ratis, or that it means that. It was like what we had heard before, is that in the principal rasas you can only function with one at a time, or only with one. Then the 7, they can come and go. You can have all those. But the 1 will remain. So that's why it comes out to there. Make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Brajanath. The more I hear about this topic, the thirstier I become to hear more. What are these rasas? Footnote 44. Similarly, the sages of Naimisharanya said, we never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead. Is glorified by hymns and prayers. Those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing his pastimes at every moment. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:19. So develop a taste for transcendental relationships with him. So it's not about the knowledge, it's not about the religion, it's not that, it's about the the relationship with Krishna, that's what then drives all the taste. Because we see is that that's the rati that drives the whole thing. That attraction to Krishna, then all it generates all these other flavors, and these other flavors then enhance the attraction. So that's what one's trying to do, is clear doubt so that there's an attraction to Krishna and an ability to apply that attraction to Krishna into their own personal life wherever they are. So,
yeah.
Okay. Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2564. One principal rati of divine love is divided into five principal devotional rasas. Shanta, neutrality, passivity, prita, satisfaction and servitude, preya, affection, vatsalya, protective indulgence, and madhurya, conjugality. Conjugality. That's cool. Okay, interesting. Protective indulgence. That's parental rasa. Each succeeding rasa is increasingly superior to the preceding rasa, right? Because it includes more the qualities of the last, plus adds another one. Yeah. There are seven subordinate rasas: hasya, humor; adbhuta, wonder; vira, enthusiasm; chivalry, karuna, mercy; raudra, wrath; Bhayanaka, fear; and Bibhatsa, ghastliness. Yes? So stop here, because now we're going to the next qualifications and disqualifications for tasting rasa.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Trinitai Gaura Vrinda.